This is Inman's Real Estate Radio, where we go behind the scenes with the industry's movers and shakers to learn what's next for real estate. For more insight, news, and analysis, visit Inman.com. Here's your host, Bernice Ross.
Welcome. I'm Bernice Ross, the CEO of RealEstateCoach.com, and I'm very happy to have Kim Addis with us. She is one of my favorite guests. She is the president and founder of Frame of Mind Coaching, and she's going to be talking about how to increase your emotional resilience today. Welcome, Kim. Thank you for being with us.
I'm really happy to be here. Always happy to talk to you, Bernice. It's always spicy.
Well, I think we're going to get a little spicy today. So let's begin by talking with a lot of people struggle with different things in their lives. It can be prospecting if you're a realtor. It can be your weight. It can be maybe managing your money, a whole bunch of different things. What kinds of things have you observed that realtors are struggling with, you know, in your experience?
And they struggle with sales. They struggle with the competition. They struggle with the economy. They struggle with the other realtors in their office. They struggle with finding a place in the world. They struggle with their the broker or the owner of their company and wondering if they matter at all. They struggle with prospecting, as you mentioned. They struggle with open houses. They struggle with everything. They struggle with everything.
Well, do they really struggle with everything, or they're just certain things? I mean, I think most of us would say, you know, for example, I was always very good at doing open houses, but I got tired of doing them, so I struggled forcing myself to do it. Where does this struggle come from, essentially?
Does everyone struggle with a lot of things? No. So where does struggle come from? Struggle essentially comes from our thinking. And so when we experience anything, we have an interpretation of that event, and that interpretation either leads us to a good outcome or a positive view of it or a negative view of it. And that's it's the interpretation or the perspective of an event that causes us to struggle or not to struggle. So, you know, you and I spoke a little bit earlier, you know, we can't control every single aspect of our business. We can control how we think about every aspect of our business. And when we think about certain aspects of our business in a way that causes us pain, we experience pain. And so what's the real key determinant? It's our thinking. So our thinking determines how we feel about everything. Our thinking determines whether or not we struggle.
Now, I'm going to challenge that, because I would say sometimes that it comes from a feeling rather than what's going on in my brain. It's something that's going on in my gut that doesn't feel right, or that's what's uncomfortable for me. And even though my brain's saying I should do it, another part of me is fighting against doing that. And the research says that what's really going on is my brainstem, which controls most of reflexive reactions and a big part of how my body regulates itself, is fighting with my cerebral cortex. And those two parts of the cerebral cortex has language, but the brainstem doesn't. It's that gut feeling. So I see those as being in conflict. Do you agree or disagree with that?
I disagree, and I'll explain to you why. Your gut feeling is really what we would say just really speedy processing. And so your gut is accumulating information consciously, unconsciously, tactically, you know, with your senses, visually, auditorily, etc. And so all that information is coming at you at a million miles an hour, and you're processing that, let's call it at an unconscious thought level, and that creates the gut feeling. But it's the interpretation, again, even unconsciously or subconsciously, that creates the gut feeling. Right? Something doesn't feel right. And maybe you can't put your finger on it, but all the data that you're absorbing creates that type of conclusion for you. So logically, everything adds up. But when you factor in those kind of less specific or less tangible items, that's still data coming in, creating an intellectual gut feeling. So for me, it all boils down to conscious and unconscious thought.
Kim, could you elaborate by giving me an example of this that would apply to people in real estate?
Well, lots of things can happen, right? So let's take an example of someone who's new to the real estate industry, and what happens is that they join a new office, and they have lots of experience in other areas. They are even perhaps highly educated, but they're new in this office, and they have some level of insecurity, and they start interacting with other, maybe perhaps more experienced people in the office. And whatever that interaction is about, they sense that they're not viewed as quite as competent as they should be, could be, or would like others to perceive them as. And so what's happening is we're absorbing a million, as you call it, a million pieces of information. And that information can come at us, again, from our auditory senses, from our visual senses. We might say, well, I was in the office and, you know, he wasn't really paying attention to me. He had his back to me. Whatever. We're collecting data. But it's the interpretation of that collection that matters. And we could be interpreting things consciously. Again, our brain actually, at various levels, thinks about 60,000 thoughts a day. We're not conscious of them all, but that's what's happening. And so we might experience a feeling, a gut feeling that says, man, I don't feel good in this office, or, you know, I don't feel like I fit in. And we're not really sure why. Because consciously, you know, the guy in the office didn't actually say anything negative to us. It's just a feeling. But, you know, when we look at the order of things, the thoughts that we have over and over again form our beliefs. The beliefs that we have generate our expectations trigger our behaviors, and our behaviors trigger our outcomes. But what's at the core of this is the thoughts that we have, in essence, generate our feelings, because it's the interpretation of what's happening that creates the emotion. I'll give you another example, and I'll take it away from real estate for a moment. You know the show American Idol. Have you heard of it?
Absolutely.
Okay, so what happens at the end of the show? You have 10 contestants, they're all up for the same prize, and 9 of them lose. And each time someone loses, you see a different reaction. One person will cry because they feel bad for themselves. One person will feel like, okay, the stress is over, I can finally sing my heart out. The next person feels like, I'm a victor, look at how far I've gone. Same event, 3 different interpretations, or rather 9 different interpretations. And what's the difference? It's not the event. It's the beliefs associated with the event. In one case, a person feels like a loser. In another case, a person feels like a winner. And it has to do with the way they think about what's happening related to the event. And that's what triggers the emotion. So our emotions are really a function of our thinking.
So the question is, then, how do I get control of my thinking, say, to deal with the fact that I don't want to prospect, or I'm struggling with my money? How do I get control of my thought processes?
Well, one thing that's very important is we have to understand the beliefs that are associated with your thought process. So let's just take prospecting. If we ask, you know, any real estate agent, why don't you like prospecting? They might come up with the following. Well, I feel like I'm bothering people. I don't know the best time to call. I don't want to get rejected. And the list goes on. And all of those are inventions, right? Like, how do you know you're really bothering someone? Or just because they say no, is that truly a rejection? And on and on and on. So we tell ourselves stories of what's happening. But there's another layer of story that says prospecting is the only way to achieve success in real estate. And that may not be true at all. So there are lots and lots of layers to this. But what's really important is to identify, this is a starting point, to identify the beliefs you have associated with what you think you should be doing. Because if you think you should be prospecting and you're not, what's the outcome? You feel bad about yourself. And that bad feeling perpetuates a gap between where you are and where you want to be.
I couldn't agree with you more. You hit on 2 things that were very important to me here. First of all, when you use the word should is about manipulation, whether you're trying to manipulate yourself to do something through guilt, or when you tell somebody they should do something, you're trying to manipulate them. The other thing is this notion of the story, because a story is something that you tell, but isn't the fact. It's your interpretation, as you put it so well. So it's your interpretation of what has happened, but it may not be the correct interpretation. So
correct.
We build these stories up about, and we have these expectations. My husband Byron likes to use the phrase, slain by an expectation. If I expect that I'm not going to be able to get clients from prospecting, then that's not going to work for me. What I firmly believe is that we absolutely need to find our strengths and then build your business around your strengths. Now, I want to go back to this notion about why people struggle. You know, there are a lot of coaches out there that are trying to address this. You've got some pretty strong feelings about what's going on in the coaching industry in real estate versus what kind of best supports people who are coaching clients, our realtors.
Yeah, so here's my philosophy. If, let's say, I were to take 50 real estate professionals and put them in a room and ask them one question, the question would be, tell me the top 5 things, 10 things, it doesn't really matter, the top 5 things you would do, you need to do in order to succeed in real estate. Could they come up with that list? Absolutely. Could they come up with a business plan? Absolutely. That's not the issue. The issue is that, by and large, a lot of real estate professionals know what they're supposed to be doing, but they're not doing it. And so what's really going on here? It's not a lack of information. It's not a lack of education. It's not even truly a lack of skills, because there's so much training out there. There's something else at play, and that has to do with their thinking. It has to do with their beliefs. So when we look at the real estate industry and the coaching, and there's a massive amount of coaching available in the real estate industry, it's all wired or geared to helping someone increase their performance by holding them accountable. So here are the 10 things you need to do. Let's break them down into smaller components, and I, as your coach, will hold you accountable. For me, that concept is what I would call unethical at best and really harmful or detrimental at worst. And I can explain that if you're open to it.
Absolutely. I'm struggling with this notion of unethical versus detrimental at best, because some people have been very successful using the accountability coaching model. I don't think of that as coaching. I think that's something else entirely. To me, coaching is something that is about finding the person's strengths and helping them improve on this. It's not saying you've got to make these 50 calls. If you didn't, you're a bad person. But what's your take on it?
Well, my take on it is this, is that, and, you know, I've been quite exposed to various coaching models, particularly in real estate, because that's where I had my start in the coaching world. But so, you know, how it's lined up is that there's a call once a week or once every 2 weeks, and there's a plan. There's an overall business plan, and the plan is broken down into smaller components, and the client is supposed to take certain actions. And on the next call, we review, did you take the action? What tripped you up? And so there, it's really, really action-focused to get someone to move forward. Is something wrong with that? There's nothing wrong with that. But if someone needs a coach, typically it's because they're struggling on their own. They know what they're supposed to do. They're not doing it. And so if coaching works in the accountability-based model, what happens? I make progress because my coach is holding me accountable. But what does that do? That makes me dependent on the coach. And what happens when the coach is gone? Now I'm left to my own devices. And so creating a dependency model, I would say, is unethical.
On the interesting flip side of that, hey, Kim, I had never thought of it as a dependency model. Very, very interesting model. Interesting.
On the flip side of that, I come into coaching because I'm struggling. I'm not doing what I know I'm supposed to be doing. You know, there are these 10 things. I wrote them down. I know what they are. Everybody talks about them in real estate, and I can't seem to get myself to do them. And then I hire a coach. And week after week, the coach says, did you do what you're supposed to do? And you know what? I start off strong, and then slowly, slowly, I phase out. So how do I feel now? I feel worse.
And I paid a lot of money to get there.
Right. I paid a lot of money to get there. I'm embarrassed. I'm ashamed of myself. I can't do it on my own, and I can't even do it with a coach. So I'm a real loser. And so that model digs a bigger hole for the client, for the real estate professional. And so they started off not feeling great. Now they feel a whole lot worse. So I would call that detrimental or even harmful. So I'm not a fan of the accountability-based model. And I think to myself, you know, I'm a coach. That's great, but who am I that somebody should be accountable to me? I think that's ridiculous. I think the coach's job and responsibility is help a person feel valuable enough and think of themselves in that way that they become accountable to themselves, that they learn to keep the promises they make to themselves outside of anyone else.
So what you're really going for, which I 100% agree with, you know, I've never liked the, quote, accountability model. To me, that's not coaching. That's something else entirely. I think you've delineated, though I've never heard anybody explain it as coherently and as clearly as you've just explained it, Kim. The way that I was taught about coaching when I got my training, Coach You, if somebody has failed to do something 3 times, declare it complete, and they, you know, they're not going to do it. You don't keep beating a dead horse. My friend Joanne Fosslin says, no one ever got to the top by working on their weaknesses. Find what works for them. What are they excited about? What works for them? What matters to them? And then that becomes what inspires or motivates them to take action.
And really, you're talking about your why, right? Like, what is the motivator? What is somebody's why? Right?
Exactly. Right. Exactly.
Well, so perhaps I have a different take on what's your why. I feel that by and large, people's why is the same. If we take, let's say, weight loss, why do you want to lose weight? Well, so I could feel healthy, so I could play with my grandchildren, so I could move with greater ease, so I could look good, so I could feel better. Like, the why is generally the same. And at the end of the day, so I could feel good, so I could be happier. Right? That's everybody's why. Why do you want to make a lot of money? Well, so I could have freedom of movement, so I could buy what I want, so I could go on those vacations, so I could purchase things for my children, so I could pay for their education and their wedding and my grandchildren's stuff. And so generally I could feel happier. I feel that people's whys are generally the same. But for me, the most important question is, what's your why not? What's stopping you? What's getting in the way? What beliefs do you have that are holding you hostage? For me, the question that's on the table that desperately needs to be addressed and answered.
So, Kim, give me an example of a kind of belief that you've seen in some of your coaching clients that is, quote, holding them hostage.
You know what? Okay, so it's not real estate, but I'm coaching a lawyer right now, a new lawyer, just graduated, and a brilliant young lady, and her story is, I'm not good enough. Really? You're a lawyer. So intelligent, so smart, so eloquent, so everything, driven, capable, and she thinks she's not good enough. And I will tell you, a lot of people have that feeling.
I read a statistic a number of years ago that said 50% of the CEOs feel they're not good enough.
There you go. Even after accomplishing a ton.
Exactly. So a lot of people are driven by that. I'm never good enough, and they feel that they are actually, in the case of the CEOs, that they're actually faking it, that they
right.
haven't earned this through their merit, through their work, through their abilities. So it's fascinating, but it drives them, and we all have different drivers. I'm with you on this. I'd rather see somebody being driven over a why that's positive rather than one that's beating myself up and saying I'm not good enough.
Right. And you know, you talked about leveraging your strengths. I'm 100% in favor of that. However, I see people who become aware of their strengths and are still paralyzed. And, you know, there's so much at play there. They're concerned about what other people think. They're concerned about how they look in the public eye. They're concerned about their performance. They're concerned about the competition. They're concerned about they compare their strengths to other people's strengths and say, yes, this is my strength, but it's still not at the level it needs to be. And on and on and on and on. What is your biggest competitor? It's your brain. It's your own brain keeping you from what you want.
There was a wonderful book that came out several years ago called Taming Your Gremlin, and the author of this book actually had people draw their gremlins, and it was quite fascinating. But one of the biggest gremlins is, I'm not good enough. And the other thing that you raised, I want to go back to, I think it's very important. When people get stuck, when they're in struggle, the key to get out of struggle is to take one small step. And I don't care what it is. And one of the things I'd love to suggest when I've talked to clients that they're just stuck and there's something horrible going on. And you can ask them, do you have a favorite client that you always enjoy talking to who would appreciate a phone call from you today? If so, go call that person right now and then get back to me. So when they can do one thing, just one small step that helps them to move past that impasse, that block, that gets them back into emotion. Because again, it's just baby steps when you're struggling get you moving forward. But a lot of baby steps can take you very, very far, even if they're just small.
Sure. A lot of baby steps can take you very far. And I will say this, that I don't like for my clients to move into action, actually, until they're ready to move into action. Why? Because thought precedes action. We think before we act. We think before we speak. You know, a lot of people come and say, I have a communication problem. And I say, well, talk to me about it. What's going on? And they're able to explain in great detail what's going on in a conflict that they're experiencing professionally or personally. And I realize, well, they don't actually have a communication problem. They have a thinking problem. And so before I encourage anybody to take any action, what I want them to do is address their thinking. Look at the thinking that's causing you so much strife and tension and distress. And once that thinking is adjusted, then take action.
It's very interesting, Kim. Daniel Amen wrote a book called Making a Good Brain Great, and he talks about what he calls ants. And ants are automatic negative thoughts, and this is what you're describing. And the way he says that you get rid of ants other than you need an anteater, the anteater is writing them down, getting them on paper. And I completely agree with what you're saying about you need to, you know, make, you need to bring this to your conscious brain, to your thinking brain. But the way you do that is by, the action is writing down your options. You know, write down the automatic negative thought, then write down what are all the options that you have available for dealing with this. Then choose the one that is the best one or that you believe will give you the best results. And then that's when you take the action. But the action step that precedes that, that gets to the thinking, is just writing down what's coming to you about it, no matter how ridiculous or how outrageous it is. Get it down on paper and then choose what will work best for you.
I think it's a great idea. When I coach with my clients, I get them to journal every single day for the duration of the coaching period. And so at the beginning of the week, we give them a journaling question. And as they start journaling, their journal goes to their coach. I have a team of coaches across North America, and the coach reads in response to the journal. And that's happening every single day. So the writing process is critical. And what are we getting at? We're getting underneath a person's thinking. We're getting at their heart, their soul, their beliefs, their values. We're getting at their perspectives. We're getting at how they are wired and what drives them or paralyzes them. That's what we're getting at. So for me, the writing process is really important to helping someone move forward.
I think this is a really important observation you just made, Kim, because when you write something down, then you're getting at the journaling is what you're saying gets you at the source. And that's how do you get at it? Well, by journaling is one of the great ways to do it. And this has become a lot more popular. What kinds of things are you seeing agents journal about? What kinds of challenges are coming up from them?
Well, for me, you know, it's not only about the journaling, but it's about the questions you ask. So for those of you who are interested in taking a closer look, I have an incredibly powerful assignment for you to do, and just write this down. So three questions. Question number one is, what do I really, really want? So if you're a real estate professional, write that down. Doesn't matter if it's something personal, professional, tangible, intangible. Could be what you really, really want is the deepest love of your life. It doesn't matter. Write it down. Then write why you want it. Why is that important to you? How will your life be affected if you have what you really, really want? And then question number three is, why don't I have it now? What's preventing me? What's getting in the way? And just that's the beginning.
For our listeners who would like some additional help on this, Kim has actually offered, made a very nice offer to MN listeners. She, if you will email her at kim@frameofmindcoaching, she will actually set you up with one of the coaches on her team to look at what you've journaled. And if you want to have a conversation, that can be arranged. So, Kim, thank you for that offer. I appreciate that. So to kind of wrap up here, What is the one or two takeaways that you'd want our listeners to have from today's session?
If you are in the real estate profession and you're struggling with whatever, if you're a broker and you're struggling with growing your profitability, or if you're an agent who is new, or if you've been in it and losing your motivation or your inspiration or your drive, what I want you to do is really think about what are the thoughts that I have about my career? What are the thoughts? And do these thoughts propel me forward, or do these thoughts really keep me in a hole? And that is really the best way to begin an exploration of getting to a new destination, is by asking yourself, what do I really think about what I'm doing here? And write it down and start to examine your thinking before taking any massive action.
Kim, thank you. This has been a very spirited conversation that we've had today. I always love your energy. We've been visiting with Kim Addis. She is the president and founder of Frame of Mind Coaching. Kim, thank you for being with us today. This was a terrific session.
Thank you, Bernice. Always good to spend time with you.
This is Bernice Ross, and thank you for joining us for MN Real Estate Radio. Be sure to tune in next Thursday when we'll be back with the industry's movers and shakers to learn what's next for real estate. For more insight, news, and analysis, visit MN.com. Make it a great day.